Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Good morning. It's 7:07. You're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. And as we do every Monday morning at this time, we'll get our state capitol report. And of course, today we inaugurate a new governor in the state of Wisconsin. And so that'll be the main topic of this hour's state capitol report. Sean Johnson, WPR's state government reporter, joins me, as does Mordecai Lee, professor of government affairs at UW-Milwaukee. Sean, I'll start with you. Scott Walker is inaugurated today as Wisconsin's next governor, and he has a lot of challenges ahead of him because the state's got an enormous budget deficit, and there are a lot of other things going on. Plus, he made a lot of promises during the campaign. What's his first few days as governor? What are his first few days as governor going to look like, Sean?
Well, it sounds like he's going to try to move fast in a special session, and that's something he talked about on the campaign. He's talked about it since the election day, and basically he said that there are a few proposals that can create jobs that he wants to move on immediately, and so he's going to bring the legislature back in. We don't know what the timetable will be on that exactly, but I imagine he'll call for that special session pretty quickly.
So what are the proposals that he wants the legislature to take up, and how does he see those as being job-creating proposals?
He's talked about a few already since Election Day. He's talked about creating a tax deduction for health savings accounts in Wisconsin. Wisconsin is one of the few states that doesn't have that. He's talked about revamping the Department of Commerce, and really basically abolishing the Department of Commerce, replacing it with a public-private partnership that would go out and try to attract employers, and then taking all the regulatory functions of the Department of Commerce and splitting them off to other agencies. And then he's talked about something, it sounds a little dry, but it's giving the governor final say on rulemaking and changing the way that agencies write administrative rules. And it sounds dry, but that could be the most interesting proposal of the bunch when you get down to it, in terms of the power shift that it would give to executives and governors like Walker.
Well, let's talk about that a little more. Exactly what would this mean? Maybe we'll have to go back and do a little state government 101 here, but the legislature creates agencies and gives them creates a law and then creates an agency to enforce the law, and then the agencies create rules to do that. So Governor Walker wants to be able to say yes or no on all of these rules that are being made by state agencies?
Yeah, and he sort of has that implicit power now. He wants to make it explicit. And I think you described it pretty well. I mean, basically, legislature passes laws but leaves out a lot of the fine details for state agencies to fill in using their expertise. And what Scott Walker wants to do is to be able to say he has the power to give a yes or no on any of those rules that come that are proposed before they even go to the legislature, which also has the power of review. So that's an interesting piece of that proposal. He also wants to make it so that any legal challenges to those rules can take place outside of Dane County. They can take place where the person's suing is from, instead of in Dane County where the rule was written. So you're changing the venue there, which is something Republicans have done in other areas of state law.
Mordecai Lee, I want to get you in on this. What do you think of that, what Scott Walker is proposing to do in terms of making himself the final authority on what administrative rules get approved or not?
Well, John, today I'm really having a sense of deja vu all over again. And the reason I say that was that in 1983, in January, was when Governor Tony Earle was sworn into office. And he said that on his first day in office, he was going to call a special session of the legislature. And I was in office at the time in the state Senate. And what I remember so clearly was how interesting it was, the mechanics of it, that I remember that Tony Earle took the oath of office, you know, put hand on the Bible, became governor, and then sort of turned and in a split second signed a piece of paper that called the legislature into session. And just to be sure that everybody understood that he did it in a legal fashion, he wrote what time he had signed that piece of paper. In other words, he wanted to indicate clearly that it was after he took the oath of office. And then we, of course, convened in this. We were sworn in that day, and we convened in the special session that afternoon. So this is not something unprecedented. At the same time, back in 1983, Wisconsin was facing a major economic crisis. So this is the same movie, except we're playing it on the right side of the aisle instead of on the left side of the aisle.
Well, what about these administrative rules and the governor's interest in acquiring the explicit authority to be the decider, if I can use that term, on which rules become a part of state law and which don't?
You're saying it exactly correctly. On the federal level, when agencies release rules, those tend to be called regulations. Here I'm doing, again, political science 101. On the state level, when an agency releases a rule, it's called an administrative rule. And all these years, since I was in the legislature, the agency would submit a draft to the legislature, and the legislature could, in a sense, exercise a kind of legislative veto if the entire legislature agreed. So it was almost like a lawmaking process. I think I agree with Sean that all along, on a de facto basis, governors could have told agencies not to submit administrative rules, except for agencies that weren't under their control, like employment and trust funds. So I'm not sure this is that big a deal. And what it really is reminding us is that since an administrative rule has the force of law once it's been promulgated, that therefore it would be understandable that it should go through a process that's comparable to lawmaking. And one of those is that before an agency submits a proposed bill to the legislature, they touch base with the governor's office to be sure that it's consonant with his policies.
This is the State Capitol Report for this first Monday of the new year. And Sean Johnson, State Capitol Reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, is with me in the studio. Mordecai Lee, Professor of Governmental Affairs at UW-Milwaukee, is on the phone. You can join us by phone as well. What are your expectations for the Walker administration? What do you think should be their top priority? We're going to talk about the cabinet appointments that Scott Walker has announced and some other things that pertain to that. There's been a little controversy about some of them already. I would expect more as we go forward, but those are all fair game for discussion during this hour. Here's the phone number to use, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can join us on Facebook. Go to the Joy Cardine Facebook fan page. You can post something there, and we'll repeat it on the radio. You can also send us an email. The address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Well, there's a chance of light snow in the north and western portions of the state today, with temperatures in the middle teens in the northwest to about 30 in the southeast. Tonight, light snow likely, mainly in the evening, 3 below in the northwest to the upper teens in southeastern Wisconsin. Tomorrow, decreasing cloudiness, temperatures near 10 above in the northwest and around 20 in the southeast. Currently, it's 8 below zero in Superior, clear skies here. Cloudy skies everywhere else in Wisconsin, at least everywhere on this list. Eau Claire, 11 degrees. It's 12 in Wausau, 20 in Green Bay, 19 in La Crosse, 22 in Madison, and 23 degrees in Milwaukee. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network of WPR. 17 and a half minutes after 7 o'clock. Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Later on today, Americans make more than 43 billion customer service calls each year. After 4 this afternoon on At Issue with Ben Marins, Ben and his guest examine the inner workings of this multi-billion dollar industry. That's coming up later today here on the Ideas Network. This hour, it's the State Capitol Report. We're talking about Scott Walker, who will be inaugurated as Wisconsin's governor today, and we'll have the coverage of that live at noon. And Sean Johnson, our state government reporter, you'll be there along with Frederica Freiberger from Freiberg from Wisconsin Public Television. Mordecai Lee is also on the phone with us as a guest in this hour. And Mordecai Lee, I want to start with you. What did you think about the governor-elect's take on the Department of Commerce, how he wants to reorganize that?
Well, John, I guess the best way to describe it is interesting in the sense that it's really hard to make a judgment if it's a good idea or a bad idea at this time. What the governor is saying is that economic development and recruitment efforts need to be sort of fleet-footed, and that all of us as Wisconsinites have an image of government, of public administration, as pretty sort of slow-moving and lumbering, and that would economic development efforts be better if they were more like a private sector corporation, if they could make decisions much more quickly. And in fact, Wisconsin had something like that. I think it was called Forward Wisconsin or something like that about 20 years ago, where the government put in some money and the private sector put in some money. Governor Walker, I should say Governor-elect Walker until noon, is suggesting we do something along those lines that reflects what Indiana did. I think the record in Indiana has yet to be proven to be a smashing success or a failure. The concerns that most people have is, yes, they want government to be more fleet-footed. Yes, they want to be able to make decisions to bring jobs into the state. But we as Wisconsinites, we're used to certain rules applying to government money. We're used to, for example, open meetings laws. We're used to open records laws. Now, if you create this sort of quasi-public, quasi-private corporation, will they be subject to open meetings? Will they be subject to open records? If they're not state employees, then therefore sort of who's their supervisor and under what are their working conditions? Who decides if they get pay raises or not? These are sort of the standard ABC issues of government, and I think it'll be interesting to see what he proposes precisely to change and then to see if it really does make a difference.
Sean Johnson, what has been the reaction so far to Governor-elect Walker's proposal on the Department of Commerce?
I think Democrats are saying that there's a little bit of a chance, if it becomes less transparent, for kickbacks to Walker allies, basically. And that he's going to staff this Economic Development Board with his appointees, and he'll chair the board. And so that consolidates a lot of power and gives him, you know, commerce is an area Democrats say where there's an opportunity to repay friends. I'll tell you, we'll play a little clip here from Scott Walker when he was announcing the proposal and the way that he described what this Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation would look like.
Think about this corporation kind of like being the local chamber of commerce. We need to have an entity that's about promoting Wisconsin, promoting jobs, telling the world and everybody here in the state that we're open for business and what we can do to help make that possible.
And it was interesting to hear Mordecai saying deja vu there, because Forward Wisconsin, as he mentioned, is another creation of Governor Tony Earle, I believe, and it was a public-private partnership. If this one's modeled after Indiana, it could be that the private money goes exclusively to those people, or that the people who are out going overseas and holding receptions for potential employers are funded with private funding. And that might, you know, that might not sound significant, but you think back during the Doyle administration and how he sort of got raked over the coals when he would go overseas on taxpayer money occasionally to speak to potential employers. You know, you wouldn't have to deal with that if you were a recruiter using private funds. Also, to hear the head of the Indiana Economic Development Corporation talk, having that private funding actually lets you serve beer at your parties. Basically, you can serve alcohol at these recruitment banquets, and that's not an insignificant thing, that if you want to attract employers, you have to be able to treat them right.
I think that Sean has really gotten to the nub of the argument, and I really like the excellent way he summarized it. And sort of, we all understand what a chamber of commerce is. It's business organizations coming together to benefit the local business situation. And so it's a private activity for a relatively broad interest, the broad interest being business expansion. Now, I think what Democrats will probably say is we don't want state government to be a chamber of commerce. We think state government has a broader public interest orientation. And so this should be a very interesting sort of philosophical argument that one gets about the role of government and responsibilities of government, something that often does not happen actually in state legislatures.
Doesn't Wisconsin already have a state chamber of commerce? Isn't it called the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce?
John, you're right on the mark, and they, of course, are a very powerful and consistent voice for state policies that benefit business. And they loved Jim Doyle in his first term because he did various things that they liked, and they sort of hated him in his second, especially when he increased corporate taxes. And so the benefit of that scenario was it was pretty easy to differentiate between private sector interests and government itself. I think the jury is out on whether the Indiana model is successful or not. It's relatively recent, and so it's really hard over the long term to come up with judgments.
Let's take some phone calls. We have some people who want to join us. Still a line available for you if you call now at 800-642-1234. We will start in Milwaukee, and we'll hear from George. George, good morning.
Yeah, I am afraid that what Mr. Walker and company are going to be doing is balancing the budget on the backs of a lot of programs that have made a lot of sense to a lot of Wisconsinites, whether it's, upping the Badger Care for people who have very modest income. They'll probably be cutting back tremendously on local funding aids. Cutting back on education, a whole raft of other programs that most people around the state support in terms of, say, like funding for state parks and things like that. And I think that Paul Krugman had a good way of describing this way of governing recently in an article in the New York Times when he talked about the incoming Republicans in the U.S. Congress, and he said that it's akin to arsonists posing as firemen.
George, thanks for the call. Mordecai Lee, you want to respond to that? And then, Sean,
I think George described what will be happening in government. After all, we have to understand that Governor Walker is a very consistent, principles-oriented decision-maker. Whether one agrees with his principles or not is different. And the most important things that George was bringing into discussion was that Governor Walker says that he will never, ever increase taxes. In fact, he wants to cut taxes and that he wants to balance the budget. Right now, we have a structural budget of $3 billion-plus. And so I think, as George did, going through a list of what state government does, I think he's absolutely right that every single thing on the list is about to be cut, or personal fees for participation will increase. I think this is going to be a form of, for lack of a better term, root canal politics. He really wants to transform the direction that state government is going. And I think people are going to be astounded when they realize how much state government touches their lives indirectly. And then it'll be the real test of public opinion, whether they like the principle of balancing the budget or they only like it when it doesn't affect them.
Sean Johnson, regardless of who had been elected in November, that $3 billion budget deficit was going to be staring them in the face.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been tough for Governor Tom Barrett if that had been the case, too. I guess one difference with Walker is that, he has rejected any kind of tax increases. And he has talked about cutting taxes, which adds to the deficit, at least, in the short term. It's undeniable. So that doesn't help your problem if goal number one is balancing that budget deficit. I think in the next few months, we're going to see what he really had in mind during the campaign when he's talking about balancing the budget. The candidates don't really get into too much detail in a campaign like that. And so once the governing starts, it's almost like a completely different world.
Could I jump in for a second?
Sure, go ahead.
I'd like to make a prediction, and I know it's always sort of risky making decisions speculation because you've got it on tape and you can play it against me if it doesn't turn out, but I'm going to make a prediction that the furloughs that all of us, all the three of us as state government employees have to take, that he's going to double it or triple it as part of the way to balance the budget. First of all, he has to balance the current biennial budget, which is about $150 million in the hole between now and July 1st, and then the structural deficit we talked about. And I think that furloughs have proven to be very cost-effective, both the way he used them in Milwaukee County and the way Governor Doyle used them on state government. And so that has to be the top of the list, a way to save money, because in government, personnel costs are so central to their total costs.
Well, thanks for that bit of good news.
Yeah, you and I might be laid off for just tomorrow.
My wife is not going to be happy to hear that. There's certainly the budget has kind of been the elephant in the room. But the truth is, nobody's talking about the biggest items in the budget. You can talk about furloughs, and you can talk about getting rid of this program or that program, but the biggest items in the budget are aids to schools, prisons, and aids to local government. And we don't hear a lot about whether or not those are going to be trimmed. How are they going to deal with the budget by only nibbling around at the edges?
Well, I mean, I think the reason you don't hear a lot about them is because they really do affect so many people. I mean, if you start talking about medical assistance, there's more than 1.1 million people now that get some form of their health care paid for by the state. That's a lot of people. And, you know, everybody's has a connection to a school in one way, a local school in one way. That's the biggest part of the budget. So, you know, you talk about the furloughs, stuff like Mordecai mentioned. You know, that affects a lot of people too, but compared to the, you know, more than million people that are affected by something like Badger Care or Senior Care, stuff like that, it's a smaller number.
And to add to that, I think it's true that during the Doyle administration that he successfully balanced budgets and the legislature balanced budgets by sort of kicking the can down the road. All kinds of various sort of tricks and late payments and stuff. And I don't think Scott Walker wants to do that particularly. I think he wants to do this.
Well, we're going to have to kick the can down the road here, Mordecai Lee, and come back to that after the news. We'll also talk about Governor-elect Walker's cabinet appointments. It's the State Capitol Report. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine here on the Ideas Network. Seven 36. Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR. It's the State Capitol Report. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. With me, Sean Johnson, WPR state government reporter. He's in the studio. Mordecai Lee, professor of governmental affairs at UW-Milwaukee, is on the phone. We're talking in the main about incoming Governor Scott Walker's first days in office. He'll be inaugurated at noon today in ceremonies that you can hear right here on Wisconsin Public Radio's Ideas Network. And then he's going to jump right into it. We've been talking about that. One of the things we said we would talk about, and I want to get to that right now, is the governor's appointments for his cabinet. And Sean Johnson, they seemed to be a little slow in coming.
Oh, yeah. I mean, by historical standards, at least compared to Governor Doyle, it was very slow. I mean, when you figure that these people were announced last Thursday, and the governor is, you know, the governor-elect is taking office today, it doesn't give him a lot of time to talk with the existing cabinet secretaries and say, hey, what is it you do here, and got any pointers. And in fact, like Friday was a state holiday, so there really was no time for them to sit down and chat with the person whose post they'll be taking. But the governor said that, you know, in the case of a lot of these people, they'd been there working with them already. He named Secretary of Department of Administration Mike Hipsch, who was the former Assembly Speaker, the last Republican Assembly Speaker during the 2007 session, excuse me. His Secretary of the Department of Commerce will be Paul Jaden, who is the president of the Green Bay Area Chamber of Commerce and was the mayor of Green Bay. His Secretary of the Department of Health Services, which oversees programs like Badger Care, is Dennis Smith, who oversaw Medicare and Medicaid under the Bush administration. And Secretary of Department of Natural Resources, Kathy Stepp, a former state senator, a staunch critic of the Department of Natural Resources. Secretary of the Department of Revenue, Rick Chandler, a former Tommy Thompson Secretary of Department of Revenue and Budget Secretary. So I think if you had to characterize the list, which goes on, you've got a lot of former or current lawmakers. You have a few people that were from the Thompson administration. Then you've got a couple of pick here and there that nobody really saw coming, where the governor-elect reached a little bit out of that pool. But he said, as far as the timing goes, it's really no worry.
The one key I should just mention, though, is it's unconventional, but the key is just because we waited till now to announce doesn't mean that people haven't been working. And as I mentioned, with a number of these key positions, Hips, Chandler, and others have literally been with me since right after the election, in here working with the key people in this current administration to make sure our transition has been smooth.
Well, Scott Walker also appointed Ben Bransel to head the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, and he was previously in that post under Governor Thompson.
Right, and he hits both of those notes. He's a former Republican Assembly Speaker and a former Thompson Ag Secretary. So, if that's sort of the theme of the appointments, he's the poster child, I guess.
Mordecai Lee, your take on that list of appointments. What do you think?
I think it's really interesting. Those were appointments that I guess what should say reflect a big tent Republican Party as opposed to an ideological Republican Party. He has some people there who are standard issue conservatives, but the way Sean described it is right. He also had some people there who came from Tommy Thompson's administration. Tommy Thompson was a moderately conservative governor who used government. He was a moderate governor who believed in governing. He wasn't just a kind of, again, for lack of a better term, a Tea Party type who was sort of cut, 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 no, no, no. And so I think that this might be the new governor showing his hand, telling us how he's going to govern, that while he is conservative, that he's also moderate and understands how to govern.
A couple of appointments there attracted some early notice in terms of Democrats speaking out and against them. Dennis Smith would be first among that list, and Kathy Stepp, both got some flack almost immediately. Sean Johnson?
Yeah, and with Dennis Smith, he works for the Heritage Foundation, or maybe I should say worked now. I don't know if that arrangement is still going, but he actually wrote memos during the healthcare debate where he talked about how Congress was setting up a situation where it would be financially advantageous for states to leave Medicaid and that the savings to their budgets would be so significant that it'd be irresponsible on the part of state elected officials to do otherwise. So he's not a fan of the way things have gone, certainly under the healthcare bill. And one wonders if he'll see things differently now that he's on the state side of things and not the federal side of things. But, he could be somebody that a Governor-elect Walker is bringing in because he knows he doesn't care for the way that the state's medical assistance programs are set up, but doesn't exactly know how he wants to change them. So you bring in an expert like this and potentially make Wisconsin sort of a laboratory for other conservatives who are looking at ways to, change Medicaid.
What about Kathy Stepp? She's getting some criticism because of her voting record as a legislator.
Not just her voting record. I mean, the tone that she said when she was in the Senate was one of, let's say she was just, I don't recall her being a fan of the DNR. She was pretty critical of, we talked about rulemaking that the agencies do earlier. She was pretty critical of the way that the department handled this rulemaking, the way that the department saw private property, I guess you could say. And she comes from the background of a home builder, and generally home builders are at odds with the department and, see it as more of a nuisance than something that's there to protect us. So Walker was asked at his press conference whether that was sort of a poke in the eye at the department.
In Mordecai Lee, I know Department of Natural Resources is going to uphold the laws of the state of Wisconsin. It's not going to go any further than what the laws are. That's the expectation we have, and I think that's a clear message. We're going to have a DNR that's based on science and that's predictable. And I have every confidence she can fulfill that.
Mordecai Lee, what's your take on these two appointments we were just talking about, Dennis Smith and Kathy Stepp?
Well, the Kathy Stepp thing is really interesting because it comes down to whether we believe in cabinet form of government. In other words, the heads of all departments serve at the pleasure of a governor. After all, just about most of your listeners can remember that it was only in the times of Tommy Thompson that we shifted from a governor who served at the pleasure of the DNR board as opposed to the pleasure, a secretary who served at the pleasure of the governor. And environmentalists over the last 2 years tried to pass a law that restored the independent secretary, and Governor Doyle had sort of shifted sides, and now he was against it. And I understand that one can make an argument that somehow the environmental field is sort of too important to be politicized, but you can really make that argument about anything. You could say that about agriculture. You could say that about commerce. You could say it about education. Either we believe that elections make a difference, that governors should be able to run the state government or not. And so I think, indeed, this is why we hold elections. She is going to run DNR very, very differently, and it'll be interesting to see what the impact of the election will be.
I heard the phrase based on science in that soundbite. Do you want to react to that?
Yeah, this is a claim that environmentalists sometimes promote regulations that aren't justifiable based on science. But it also is a bit paradoxical because America's Right sometimes claims that there is no science that proves that there's global warming or climate change going on. But as a principle, I think it's really healthy. You do things because you can justify them, not because ideologically you think they're a good idea.
Mordecai Lee, I know you have to leave us now, but I wanted to just say thank you for spending time with us on this morning.
Thanks for inviting me, John.
Mordecai Lee, Professor of Governmental Affairs at the UW-Milwaukee. Sean Johnson stays with us for the rest of the hour. We'll take your calls. You can get in on this at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. I'm going to toss this out to our listeners. What do you expect? What do you hope for in the Walker administration and this new legislature that we have? What is it that you want from them, and what would you like to see done first? And we'll take your calls in just a moment. It's going to be, there's going to be a chance of light snow in northern and western Wisconsin. Today, temperatures will range from the middle teens in the northwest to about 30 degrees in the southeast. Light snow likely, mainly in the evening tonight, 3 below in the northwest to the upper teens in the southeast. Decreasing cloudiness for tomorrow, temperatures near 10 above in northwestern Wisconsin, and around 20 in the southeast. Still 8 below zero in Superior. Cloudy everywhere else. It's clear in Superior. Cloudy everywhere else. 12 in Eau Claire and Wausau. 20 in Green Bay. La Crosse 21. 23 in Madison and in Milwaukee. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. It's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 747, you're listening to the Ideas Network of WPR. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Coming up later on today on the Ideas Network, Ollie and Susie are London-based artist explorers who collaborate with one another and induce wild creatures to interact with their canvases. Bites, footprints, rips, and slithers are proof of where they are now, they say, but might not be for much longer. They join Gene Faraca after 3 on Here on Earth, here on the Ideas Network. Sean Johnson is in with me for this State Capitol Report. We're talking about the incoming administration. Scott Walker will be inaugurated as Wisconsin's governor in a ceremony at the State Capitol at noon today. And Sean, before we go to phone calls, I wanted to ask you, I've heard a couple of terms thrown around. We heard in the news story on the half hour at 7:30 about that the governor was expected to declare an economic emergency, but I've also heard the term fiscal emergency, and those two things don't mean the same thing, do they?
No, I mean, fiscal emergency, he'd be talking about Wisconsin's state budget, and could be a sign that he needs a budget repair bill. In other words, that the budget they passed in, that the governor signed in July of 2009 isn't going to make it all the way till July of 2011. So that could be a sign that he's going to go there. Economic emergency would apply to this stuff that he says is geared more toward the economy. And I'm not sure either of them has exactly has statutory significance, you know, that by declaring economic emergency, I don't know that that gives him any additional powers. But well, I'm sure we'll find out.
Well, I know that the term fiscal emergency has a special meaning when used in the context of the university.
Yeah, that if he were to control the regents, I believe, and he would, you know, right now he's going to deal with a board of regents that is all Doyle appointees. So he doesn't necessarily they aren't going to necessarily take steps that he would favor. But that may be what you're getting at there.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with that. I wanted to make sure we were using the right terms. We've talked about some cabinet appointments. We talked a little bit about the special session that he's going to be calling, or is expected to call, and what's going to happen there. There is already set up a built-in conflict between Scott Walker and the employee unions of the state of Wisconsin. Talk about that a little bit, and what your expectation is there in the next few days.
I think it's going to be a rocky 4 years, but for the relationship between Walker and public employees, and I think it'll probably get off to that rocky start day one. I wouldn't be surprised if you see some union people show up to show their displeasure with the governor-elect, and as this battle goes on and on, I just don't see them being friendly at any point here. At least not the blue collar union, the AFSCME union that is called Wisconsin State Employees Union in Walker. I just don't see them coming to terms. You know, maybe. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll whether it boils over into an all out labor war, or whether it's just rocky relationship, we'll see.
And one thing I forgot to mention earlier, there were some holdovers in terms of the governor's cabinet. Three of them that the governor-elect said he would keep, at least temporarily, because he wanted to make sure that we had continuity in matters of public safety, that those three would be, as I see it, Adjutant General Donald Dunbar, who heads the Wisconsin National Guard and Department of Military Affairs, Emergency Management Administrator Michael Hinman, and State Patrol Superintendent Dave Collins. I guess I hadn't even realized those were political appointments.
Yeah, and Collins may actually be a civil servant right now, the way that his position is defined or based on his employment history. But and there are a number of appointments that Walker will make, like executive assistants, which are, you know, the number one, number two or three positions and agencies. Those are room for political appointments in there, too.
Let's take a call from Rich in Rhinelander. Rich, good morning.
Good morning. At noon today, I will listen to our new governor's inaugural, and what I expect is, as in his campaign, his consistent sentimentalizing of the business community as though its interests are the same as the interests of the public and the public sector. Imagine 1,000 violins playing in the background, and every time Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce is mentioned, it rises in the background as a Mormon tabernacle choir, basically demonizing the public sector. I think I will have to, for the next several years, fight slipping into a mental coma at this sort of Wagnerian view of what's good in the state of Wisconsin and what is absolute evil in the state of Wisconsin. I think this governor is in for some big surprises when he appoints a woman, as he did to the DNR, which historically was known as the Conservation Department, but the new appointee is a developer.
Rich, thanks for the call. Sean Johnson, any reaction to that?
I don't know what I can add to that. Rich painted quite a picture there.
Well, Scott Walker made it pretty clear during the campaign. I mean, he said the government doesn't create jobs, businesses create jobs, and there's no, he hasn't disguised anything here. His attitudes and his views on this have been pretty consistent.
No, yeah, absolutely. And his views, his publicly stated views are very much in line with what a Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce likes to see. In fact, He actually filled out a survey, came toward the end of the campaign for the Milwaukee, basically the Milwaukee chamber, that said, you know, would you favor abolishing Wisconsin's corporate income tax? And I mean, that's getting rid of it altogether. And he said yes. Never really elaborated on that much. And he's focused on other tax cuts he wants to do. But that's, you know, that's a big deal if he were to go through with that. And so, yeah, he's very receptive to the business community's ideas.
Do you think, Sean, that the new governor and legislature will be looking to repeal things that were passed in the previous legislature?
Yeah, that could be the story of the session, really. There was a, you know, in the budget especially, there was stuff that the Democrats passed that, like combined reporting, which keeps multi-state.
Closing the Las Vegas loophole is how they framed it.
Right. And then there's a new income tax bracket for people make more than $300,000 a year. That was added to the last budget. They scaled back Wisconsin's exclusion for capital gains income. That's, you know, potentially ripe areas for Republicans to go after. Although if they do that, you know, every one of those they revert makes the budget hole worse. They could end up going after other bills that didn't have a fiscal note attached. You know, like the Indian mascot law that the Democratic legislature passed last time. Republican Representative Steve Noss has already said that he wants to repeal that. And so I think you might find a list of laws of that nature that could be, you know, historically speaking, could be end up being pretty short-lived because they were passed by an all-Democratic legislature and governor, and they could be repealed a couple years later.
There are other things that may come up in this special session that the governor-elect will be calling. There's some discussion, I think, of a tax cut for small business and tort reform.
Yeah, tort reform is kind of the vague one because, I mean, especially, you know, what Scott Walker would call reform, I think other people would say, you know, there's nothing reform about it. And basically what he's talking about there is the rules for lawsuits. And as far as the tax cut for small business, that is the one tax cut that as the campaign moved out of the primary election and into the general campaign with Tom Barrett, that's the tax cut that Scott Walker talked about consistently. He stopped talking about wanting to repeal combined reporting, and he stopped talking about this other stuff, and he just focused on that tax cut for small business. I don't know how significant that is. There, you know, we haven't seen a bill yet. We haven't seen any kind of analysis from Legislative Fiscal Bureau on that yet. You would assume that if the special session is going to get called here, we'll find out fast.
Well, you're going to be at the inauguration as a part of our coverage of that event. Do you expect the governor to duplicate what Mordecai Lee talked about Tony Earle doing and sign an order asking for a special session right after he takes the oath?
He could sign the order. He could sign the order today. I don't know if he's going to turn around and do it on the same stage. That's pretty good theater. I don't know that the legislature would meet as immediately as the legislature did when Mordecai was serving. I mean, the legislature serves less now. Also, we don't, they may come out today, they may come out soon, but we don't have bills as of yet. At least the public doesn't have bills to know what we're talking about with these reforms. And he actually hasn't introduced or hasn't come out and had a press conference on a couple of them. So I don't know if it's going to be that immediate that he acts on the special session. But I would expect him to call it right away.
All right. Well, Sean, we'll look forward to listening to your coverage of the inauguration starting at noon today here on the Ideas Network. And I appreciate you joining me this morning.
All right. Thanks, John.
Sean Johnson, WPR state government reporter. Earlier we heard from Mordecai Lee, professor of government affairs at UW-Milwaukee. Rob Ferret produced this program and handled on-air production. Thank you for that. Help from Bill Martins this morning. More to come on the Ideas Network. Next hour we're going to talk about stuttering. Stay tuned. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of WPR.